This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 361. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me is my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Still basking in the glow of spanking the kitty this last weekend.
Spanking the kitty is back.
Yeah.
We weren't allowed to forget it either.
No, I can't remember who posted the question in the Ring of Honor if it was time to bring it back, but they were 100% right, and I appreciate them letting us know that needed to be brought up. So it was either that, we were either going to start with Spank the Kitty or Russell's FU glove revenge game.
Yeah, that was an interesting glove. I didn't even know he was wearing a glove until someone in the Discord, I think it was Carcar, who pointed it out, and I'm like, yeah, he's been wearing a glove on the opposite hand. How's that even supposed to help him with his throwing? And then it's like, it occurred to me, oh yeah, moron, there's a glove on his throwing hand too.
Right. Is it just a mean hobo glove? Is that what it is? Is that his version of a hobo hat?
It's kind of a hobo glove. It has the fingers cut out and everything except the middle finger.
Do you think that was a subliminal message to the 12s in the organization?
Oh, you think that just as Earl Thomas had his last game at home in CenturyLink with a middle finger to the sideline, mm-hmm. Russell Wilson gave a symbolic gesture to the yeah. sideline and really everybody in attendance?
Or did it just help him grip the ball in the wet and he threw for four touchdowns? I mean, if we're going to play the What's More Likely game, right?
If I'm playing the What's More Likely game, I feel like it has to do more with the wetness and the grip on the football than Russell Wilson sending subtle messages. But I don't know. Yeah. I do have some thoughts on Russell Wilson seemingly sending subtle messages through press conferences, because going back to even before the game, there were some messages there.
Interesting. I'll be interested to hear your take, because I think there's a lot of ways you can go with all of that. And I definitely have kind of fallen on where I feel at this moment, and it'll be interesting to go from there.
Well, let's talk about this game first, because yes, the Seahawks, they spanked the kitty with a 51-29 win. 50 points, something we haven't seen a Seahawks offense do since 2012, Russell Wilson's rookie season. 50 points, not something you see a lot, even in the NFL as a whole. Only three other teams have done it. The Patriots did it twice this year. The Cowboys were one of the teams. The Bills are one of the teams. All three of those other teams are going to the playoffs. Even if it was the Lions, 50 points, that's a good number. Are the Seahawks a good team or a bad team? I don't know.
They're the best of the bad teams right now.
Bad teams don't score 50 points.
Unless you're the best of the bad teams, you can luck into a 50-point game. But maybe they are a good team and they just haven't
figured... Was that luck, though? It's not like Detroit had a bunch of random turnovers where they ended up scoring off of easily. Now, there were a couple turnovers, but I don't consider them to be random.
I'll put it to you this way. If they had scored 35 against the Lions, would I have been impressed? No. Them scoring 51 against the Lions, am I impressed? Sure, a little bit. I mean, cool. The offense looked like it was supposed to look. They finally pulled their head out of their ass and started moving the pocket. That was amazing to see early on in the game. Like, they actually changed the launch point on almost every single passing play for the first few drives. What a difference that made. We were sitting talking about that for the longest time. And then when Russ did sit in the pocket, he actually stepped up into the pocket thingy.
Yeah.
That's what he did. Instead of trying to bail out backwards and take a giant sack. And then you have the offensive line play like a competent NFL offensive line. And again, level of competition and everything. But that just shows you how this offense is supposed to work. And then I'm sure we're going to get to Walter Payton's clone, Rashad Penny, who is about ready to become Jim Brown 2.0, that we should sign to a 10-year deal right now. But yeah, that's the way the offense is supposed to look. They actually were doing the things like multiple looks, different motions. Like, this was what we were supposed to see from week two on. We saw it in week one, and then we never saw it again until now.
Rashad Penny, Jim Brown, Walter Payton, Sean Alexander, and Adrian Peterson all rolled into one.
Yeah.
Handoff straight ahead. Goes Penny again, sidesteps. 30, on the run, 35, 40, near sideline, midfield. Stiff arms a man and is pushed out of bounds near the Seahawks sidelines. Tracy Walker pushes him out. Rashad Penny is absolutely swamped by teammates on the near sidelines, helping him up off the ground. Penny now over 100 yards in the first half.
I'm still struggling with how to feel about Penny and what to do with him in the future, because on one hand, you look at him and you say, holy smokes, look at the games that he's been able to put together. And then you think about it and you look at the opponent. It's like, well, it's the Texans, the Bears, and the Lions that he's had these really good games against. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to take that chance next year?
Oh, my gosh. I don't understand how anybody's conflicted about this. This is very simple. Rashad Penny is in a contract year, has the opportunity due to all the other injuries, finally has somebody that apparently can get through to him in AP, be like, hey, maybe be a little bit tougher. So he finally does. And then the offensive line is better than most bad defensive lines. Like, look, this last game, I watched the highlight package first because I watched the game on Tuesday, right? Yeah. I watched the highlight package first. And I was like, holy smokes, Penny had himself a game. Let's see this. There was one of those runs that got me to go, ooh. The rest of them were like, oh, big hole. Actually read it for a change. Tell me this. Riddle me this. If you took Thomas Rawls right now and put him behind that offensive line for that game, does he run through those same holes and get right about the same amount of yardage as Rashad Penny?
I don't know about Rawls, because I do think Penny has a little bit better of a burst than Rawls did. But I know the one that you're talking about, and it was the one where Penny, he just broke the guy's ankles, kind of fake into the outside and then cut up inside. Is that the one you're thinking of?
Yeah, it was on the right side.
Yeah,
I want to say third quarter, something like that. Anyways, I mean, this Penny resurgence and oh my goodness, look at how amazing he is. He is a great, nobody touches him runner. And I understand that there's all these stats about his broken tackles the last few weeks too. Look at this last game. Look at those broken tackles.
Yeah, there were arm tackles
where a guy's like reaching out and gets one hand on him. And now it's a broken tackle, just like his college stats. This is what you do with Rashad Penny. All right, fine. It took you 4 freaking years to finally figure out how to be a tough guy and actually run between the tackles with some decisiveness. And it took Adrian Peterson to come in and smack you up inside the head to finally get it done. And the pressure of it being on a contract year. Here's a 1-year deal, league minimum. If you want to come back, that's great. If you don't, I'll find another dude who's just a dude to do your just a dude things and probably be healthy more.
I think I'd be willing to go just slightly above that, but I'm of the same opinion that you don't give him some kind of bank breaking type deal and pay him as if he's one of the top. You don't pay him as if he's one of the top dudes.
You don't pay him as a starter. If you want to pay him as a backup, okay. I'm cool with it.
I think that there is that type of, but the thing is that there may be another team that's willing to pay him more, and then good for him then.
Yeah. The world's full of suckers. And that sounds great.
It's not saying that he can't go on to have a really great career beyond this year. It's just you put it in context of, like you said, with the Adrian Peterson thing being the guy to help make him finally realize it, with him coming off so many injuries. CJ Procise had the ability to go on and do better things, too. And really, after he left Seattle, it's just kind of been more of the same.
And exactly. The other name that I wanted to bring up yet again was Thomas Rawls. Remember that like 4 or 5 game streak of Thomas Rawls where we all thought he was the next dude up?
If he wouldn't have gotten injured, though, I do wonder if things would have been different. Because didn't he jack up his knee somehow pretty badly? Yeah.
Oh, for sure. But you get my drift. 4 or 5 good games does not make a Hall of Fame career.
Sure.
And like everybody being like, oh, my gosh, Rashad Penny. He came out of the woodwork. Oh, look at him. He's a big guy. Who knew? Well, not even Rashad, because he even tells everybody he forgets that he's a big guy. That's not the mentality you want out of running back. Like, no, thanks. I'm good. And not only that, but if we want to talk about running production and what that means to this team and that chicken and the egg kind of conversation, what makes the other a great offensive line or a great running back? Which one makes either? Holy smokes. Does this week or these last few weeks when we play bad teams, does that not answer that question?
Yeah, I think the difference is that a back with some talent can get you those extra yards beyond the 5, 6, 7. Because really, the offensive line was getting Penny those 5, 6, 7 yard runs. And it's the ones where he's able to break out some of those tackles or put a move on a guy that it ends up being 15, 20, 25 yards or, you know, taking it to the house. So the back can have that capability of making it an even better run. And it just, you just have to have that vision to find the holes that the offensive line is giving you. And so I'm with you. Yes, you need the offensive line to be good.
So I have zero interest in giving Rashad Penny money and 1,000,000% interest in going out and paying every capable offensive lineman money can buy this offseason.
Okay. Well, do you start with any of the dudes on your own team? Because Clinton Bonner at Clinton Bonner on Twitter says, with Phil Haynes, is this going to be one of those things where he goes and gets like $10 million a year from a team and is really, really good after we squander his rookie time in Seattle? I hope not. Thoughts? You see George Fant this year?
Exactly. I'd say this is closer to Fant and a Fetty than it is, say, Carpenter.
You think that Phil Haynes is good then?
No, I think he's more like Fant and a Fetty than he is Carpenter.
Oh, Carpenter went on to be, to be legit.
Yeah.
Well, I think that Fant, though, has done decently in New York this year. He's been okay.
Did you just say that with a straight face?
He's been okay, right? I mean, it's the Jets. So it's maybe it's hard telling, not knowing type of territory, but
maybe. But yeah, I guess
I don't feel comfortable putting him in the Effetti camp, but I don't think I would be. Right. Well, I'd be comfortable either if George Fant were on our team making $10 million a year.
Exactly. So we have three tiers. We have the Effetti tier, and we all know what that looks like. Most of us cussing at our TV screen. And then we have the Fant tier, which is overpaid for meh play. And then we have Carpenter, who was injured his whole rookie contract and then went on to be pretty good.
I've been more happy with Jake Curran in just these last couple of weeks than I have with Effetti's entire time.
Absolutely. And look, and this is what I'll say about Jake Curran. That's great. I'm really excited to have a replacement level backup that can come in and hold his own and be good against the bad teams and kind of get pushed around by the good teams. That's a great backup to have. Am I investing in him as a starter? Oh, hell no. Absolutely not.
Sure.
The only person I would invest in, because Gabe Jackson's not up this year. He just got signed. Dwayne Brown's up. I'm sorry. I'm not paying a 37-year-old tackle unless I whiff on any of the younger tackles. I think Taron Armstead's going to be out there this year. There's going to be a few. You got a crap ton of cap money going into this offseason. Go spend it solely on offensive line.
Right.
Look, a lot of people are talking about D-line and pass rushers, and that's all well and dandy. And that would be my second choice of where to spend that money. But it's clear. It's clear as day that if it's going to continue on in the future as it has now, in terms of personnel for the most part, at the perimeter and the quarterback and the coaching arena, then the way to go forward is to make that offensive line a dominant offensive line.
Well, and that's the thing that this game really demonstrated in particular, because, okay, yes, take out of the fact that the Lions are a bad team, but you look at it and you say, okay, if you upgrade the offensive line and you're playing this way against better teams, then this is what the offense would look like. This is the type of offense that Russell Wilson is supposed to be able to run. If the run game is clicking like it's supposed to, you're getting 5, 6, 7 yards a clip, and then you can build off the play action. You can, Russ doesn't have to throw it 40, 50 times in this offense. He only has to throw it 18 to 30 times, and he can throw for 4 touchdowns.
Yeah, I think this game is a demonstration short of the failure to close in the fourth quarter yet again.
That doesn't bother me. It does not bother me when you're up by. But
that's when it gets hypocritical. It should bother you every time they don't do it.
The type of defense that they play, I'm okay with when you're up 3 to 4 scores.
Well, not
when you're up by 10 points like they have been playing most of this year.
Offense settled for field goals in the fourth quarter. That to me, again, is Russell Wilson not closing. That should bother you still.
Okay. On the offense, I thought you meant the type of defense that they're playing.
Oh, God, the defense. I mean, you gave up 29 to Tim Boyle. Like, are you kidding me? Like I'm not happy about that at all. I can't wait to talk about the defense and roast them because that's pathetic. But because a lot of people look at this game and they're like, "Woo, all right, like look at all the potential. We'll be back." And it's like, what are you talking about? All the same problems were there for the most part, except for the fact that they ran the ball effectively for a change, and what it does for the rest of the offense. Now, this is the exact offense what we saw that Pete Carroll wants to run, and this is the exact offense that I think Russell Wilson wants to run.
Yeah, I think it can be both.
Yeah, Ross Bell, one of the little flockers, he posted an article from Rob Staten, who he's talked to many times, and you've talked to many times on the show. It was a very lengthy article about the offense and this last game, and he talks about a lot of topics, but that being the crux of it, and his point being, the reason why Russ has been upset with the offense isn't that he doesn't want to run this offense, it's that they can't do that consistently.
Don't you think that that makes a lot of sense?
100%.
When I read that too, I thought, yeah, absolutely. The consistency mm-hmm. is the issue.
Yeah.
And because I think it's the issue with the fans too, because gosh, you get to the end of the game and you even had fans booing. And I don't know whether it was because they wanted Pete Carroll to go for the touchdown and get the 58 points, or to me, I wonder if they're booing because they're thinking at the end of the game, why can't you do this more consistently?
I think they were booing because they wanted to see the offense score in Russ's possible last home game. That'd be my guess.
Russ had a lot to tell. Are you done with this game? We can move on to Russ and the talk about this being his last game with the Seahawks.
The only thing I want to emphasize is, because I talked about it earlier, but I really want to emphasize it, how much they moved the pocket and what a big difference that made in the way that Russ played the game. And then it allowed Russ to run a little bit too. I just thought that was such a huge deal, and it's something that hasn't been utilized enough all season.
And I do want to touch on the defense too, before we move on, because yes, they gave up 29 points to Tim Boyle, but it was 38-7 before the Lions actually started scoring points.
Yeah.
And they also did it with a guy named Mike Jackson, who I didn't even know was on this team, was playing cornerback in this game, and he actually looked really good.
Yeah. First time I noticed Mike Jackson on the screen, I was like, Jackson, who's that? Like, I saw it, and I was like, oh, I must have been seeing things. Like, I don't know. You know, they like saw him two more times on the screen. Like, who the hell is Jackson 30? Who is this?
Yeah, I had no idea. Yeah. I had to go to the roster and look him up, and I had no idea he was even on this team.
Yeah, I mean, honestly,
and then I went back and I looked at some of his film at Miami, and it was like, holy smokes, this guy in college was crushing it and making some really good plays. And maybe they found another gem that they got from the Patriots.
Maybe it's hard telling, not knowing a little bit, but give him some more opportunities here this last game. The defense was annoying in the way that it's been annoying all year. No real pass rush, soft zones, letting their best player catch the ball over and over and over again.
Yeah.
We all know that St. Brown's their best receiver, right?
I feel like it should have been obvious to anybody watching maybe the last three or four Lions games.
I've only listened to one Lions game on the radio driving back from Oregon like 3-4 weeks ago. And from that was the game. That was their first game they won. It was against the Vikings, and he threw it to St. Brown for the winner.
Yeah.
Goff did. And I was like, man, he played well that entire game, right? It's like, that St. Brown kid's pretty good.
Yes.
And I knew it. I just listened to it on the radio once.
Well, you can go down the list of all of their players who got targeted or touched the ball. And he's the only name other than DeAndre Swift, who's been injured. And this was his first game back after being injured. I don't recognize any of the names even. It's Jamal Williams at running back, Craig Reynolds, Kadarrell Hodge, Trinity Benson, Taylor Decker. I do recognize that name. Matt Nelson and Tom Kennedy.
Yeah.
I don't know who those people are.
Yeah,
and I watch
nor
football.
Should you. Yeah, yeah, no, you're fine. You don't have to question your football fandom right now. So, just the idea that with all those other dudes, you play the same style you've been playing all year. You give up a bunch of yards and points to Tim Boyle and Amarab St. Brown. And, it's the same stuff. Like, nothing was fixed. Like, again, this is people being excited about this game. And it's like, I saw the same terrible habits for the most part, other than being able to run the ball.
I mentioned Taylor Decker's name as somebody who got a reception. And I said, yeah, I recognize that name. And then I forgot that's their left tackle.
Yes, that's an offensive lineman. Yeah.
It's not one of their offensive weapons.
Wasn't that game.
It was maybe one of their better ones.
Yeah. So not excited about the defense at all in that game. Just another ho-hum, difficult performance to watch. The offense just happened to be converting on third downs enough to make it palatable. And thank goodness Bobby is more or less okay. And that's great to hear. But that was tough to watch him going down first play.
Yeah.
Because if he had torn up his knee, this offseason conversation around Bobby probably would have been a lot different.
It would have been a lot different. Yeah, it's already he's already getting the questions asked of him in the press conference if he feels like this is one of his last games as a Seahawk.
And he talks a certain way about it. And I guess if we are done talking about this game, that would be a decent segue into the rest of the conversation that is flowing around this team right now.
Well, you know, it was funny. It was the question to Bobby that actually seemed to spark the it wasn't a question to Russ because that's not what he was asked. But he referenced the question to Bobby when he gave this answer. And I'm going to start this clip a little bit early because I just want to show kind of how awkward it was, the transition of what he was talking about in this game leading up to playing the Lions to ultimately where Russ went with the question.
The record may not show it, but they're playing really tough football. They're playing really good football, and they've played in the past 4 weeks in particular. They've been battling and battling and battling. They beat some good teams, you know, in terms of Arizona and Minnesota. So that's the focus of today. You know, I know for me, you know, when I think about, I know you guys asked Bobby about, could this be your last game and this and that and all that. You know, I know for me personally, I hope it's not my last game, but, you know, at the same time, I know it won't be my last game in the NFL, you know, so I'm just focused on the day, you know, and getting better today. And so that's my focus. That's my goal. I love the city and I love this, you know, this moment. So, you know, I love these guys. And so we got to make sure we get better today. That's the only thing that matters.
That's just the focus for today. I'm just focusing on today. But let me talk about how I hope this isn't my last game. And remember when you'd asked Bobby about that question yesterday? And you know how I'm just focused on Detroit. But I also hope that this isn't my last game in Seattle.
Okay. So what does that say to you?
He was hoping somebody asked him the question so that he could get out this response. And nobody had asked the question to this point. And so he was working it into his answer awkwardly.
But what does that mean to you? Like, because I understand the idea that if you're a player like Russ and you know these questions are coming and all of that, wanting to work it in so that you have control of the way the question, like he basically kind of asked the question of himself in a way so that he could respond the way that he wanted to control the narrative, right?
Yeah.
Like, I understand that, but what did you get out of that?
Well, I got out of it that he really, really hopes that he's back next year.
In your answer a few minutes ago, you mentioned that maybe this could be your last game with the Seahawks in Seattle. Just kind of curious if that's something you think is realistic and if that's something that's going through your mind at all, that maybe Sunday could be your last game at Lumen with this.
No, I guess I was replying back to what Bobby had mentioned, and I'm just saying that, you know, I think that, you know, you never know, but I think that for me personally, I hope it's not. I was saying I hope it's not. But I was also saying that in terms of the preparation, I also know that, you know, the reality is that it won't be my last game in NFL period. So every day you have to give everything you have. You know, there's no take the day off here, or take the day off there, or whatever it is. I guess I meant that's more so what I meant.
So he really hopes. He really hopes.
Okay.
I don't know what to get out of it, Adam. Why would he keep saying that he hopes to be back?
Okay, because I have thoughts on it, but before saying anything, I wanted to hear how those comments and his other comments in his press conferences have made you feel about his return.
It makes me feel like he's not coming back next year. When I hear him say it that way, when I keep hearing him say over and over again that he hopes that he's back, it makes me think that he doesn't expect to be back. And that's why I thought with Michael Sean Dugar of The Athletic, he picked up on this. And, you know, he's asking Russ, Why do you have to hope to be back? You're under contract and you have a no trade clause. Do you expect to be back?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I hope so. You know, I hope that's the case. You know, and you know, it's take one day at a time. And today is really about our team today, and that's what I'm going to focus on today. But it was special today, you know. And but yeah, you know, that's my hope.
So this had carried over from Thursday to now after the game on Sunday, and he's still using that hope word.
Okay, so I had a different takeaway.
Okay,
from that. So basically, you have Russell Wilson over the last couple press conferences saying, I really hope to be here. And you say, why do you have to say the word hope? You have a no trade clause and you're under contract. Because it's a business. And there's a lot of things that can change between now and the new league year, right? Does that mean, do you think Russ wants to be there if they trade Bobby, don't bring back Quandre, and blow the whole thing up and be on a rebuilding team? Does Russ want to be there for that? And if they are doing that, why would they not trade him and pick up a bunch of assets, right? So sure. When he says, I hope I want to be here, there's a lot of things that have to happen in order for that to go down. Now, one of those questions could be how he feels about Pete, right?
Right.
And then you hear Pete come out and his presser, and he basically gave the double birds to all the press and said, look, our conversations internally, it doesn't line up with your little chatterbox mill that you got going over there, your little rumor mill, you bunch of little, you know, high school divas. Like, we're fine. Keep talking all you want. We're fine. And we have the same vision that we're going forward with. So, and then I hear Bobby talk about, I don't think this is my last game as a Seahawk. I really don't. And talk about somebody who's totally in control of his situation. I mean, he's his own freaking agent on top of all of that, right? And then you have Quandre a few weeks ago out in his press conference. The team knows how I feel about this team. It, you know, I want a deal to get done. Like, it's saying that he wants to be back. The only person I've heard that talks about not necessarily wanting to be back is Carlos Dunlap. Everybody else has been talking as if they want to be back. And then you have Pete talking as if he's not even worried about the idea whether or not he's coming back. That in his head, I mean, the way he's talking, the confidence in which he speaks, he's back next year. Like, that is happening. Write it down. Book it. Like, unless some scandal comes out that he was like texting underage girls or some nonsense, right? Like, so it's something like that. Like, if he just continues to be Pete Carroll, he is back next year. Like, there is no doubt in my mind, considering the money aspect of it and everything. And the Seahawks have all the power when it comes to the Russell Wilson situation. Basically, Russ is just saying, I know the team is going to listen to offers this next offseason, and that may dictate whether or not they want to blow the whole thing up and ship me out. Because if they're going to blow the whole thing up, then yes, sure, ship me out. But if you're going to keep all these other guys and we're just going to retool a few things and all that, I'm in. Like, it, to me, it's very simple. I would put my property on the idea that it's going to be Russ and Pete back next year.
That makes the most sense to me. I don't know why Russ would talk that way if that's more of a certainty, because everything that I hear from Pete, it isn't blow it up type mindset. I even, when I look at the roster, I don't think of blowing things up necessarily, because you have so many different pieces. You could build the offensive line, you can build the defensive line, but those other parts, I feel like there's enough of a shell there that you can, you know, with a couple pieces here and there, you can have a really good team.
Right.
And so when I hear Russ...
No, hold on with that right there.
Okay.
Hold on with that right there. So Russell Wilson knows in his heart and in his mind and in the future, for sure, that a team like, I don't know, the New York Jets calls up and says, I'll give you Zach Wilson, 4 firsts and a sack of oranges, because I know you like oranges, John Schneider. Like, you know, just whatever. Like, just make a godfather deal, sure, right, that they can't refuse. Russ knows that. So if he doesn't know that that's not going to happen, so he can't say, I'm coming back next year, period. He can't say it. Why paint yourself into a corner? Or if the Seahawks go and do a bunch of stuff that he's not stoked about in terms of the way they're going to retool, why would he paint himself into a corner so that he can't then ask out?
I think it's more of the second one than the first one that would be where because I think he wants to come back if it's more along the lines of his own terms, the things that are going to work for him.
I don't know if it's his own terms or if the team does what it says it's going to do.
Because he was very clear that he wants to win three more Super Bowls. And again, he hopes it's in Seattle. And Corbin Smith asked him again here this week on Thursday. He asked him the question, why do you keep saying hope, essentially, again, just like Michael Sean asked him, and he's asking for more clarification. Corbin again brings up the no trade clause, saying, well, you have this no trade clause. And so Russ explains what the no trade clause, and I think this is helpful for people because they may not know either what a no trade clause is, especially in that contract for.
Well, I think, first of all, Corbin, you know, when it comes to no trade clause in sports, the main reason is for so teams can't trade somebody to anywhere. That's the number one reason, right? Because in sports, you know, you could wake up the next morning, you're gone somewhere else. That's the number one reason. I think the going back to your main question, though, you know, for me, you know, I think what I'm really super passionate about, obviously, you know, my goal is to win more Super Bowls. And you know, my plan is to win them here. You know, it's that simple. You know, I think that's and so that's, you know, there's nothing really else other than that.
So it is interesting that he brings up the no trade clause and explains it in the way that, yeah, it's so I have some sort of a say of where I go. It's mm-hmm. not just so they can trade me and I have to go to Jacksonville all of a sudden or Miami and I don't want to go there. I have a say in it.
And?
Just, I thought it was interesting.
Oh, okay. Well,
that he decided to clarify that there.
All right. I thought you had a larger point with it. I don't understand why or even how Russ can be more declarative than, I hope to be here. I want to win three more Super Bowls and I want to do it here.
Like, I know how he can be more declarative. He can sound like Dwayne Brown and I love it here. I absolutely want to be back next year. Dwayne could not have been more clear.
Okay. I mean, sure. He's also a free agent. I don't know. I just, if you're Russell Wilson and you have options in life, I just don't understand why you would say something more. That's as declarative as he can possibly get without making himself look like a hypocrite if the Seahawks do a bunch of things that he hates and then ends up wanting to leave. Like, he's not going to stay for a full-on rebuild. He's not going to do it. And there, if you're going to do a full-on rebuild, then you're not going to keep Russell Wilson.
No, you were going to need him to do a full-on rebuild. I don't know why you're going to this rebuild thing when, what evidence do you see that would make Russ even consider that the team were looking at some kind of rebuild?
Isn't that all that everybody breathlessly talks about in the media? That this is a whole rebuild situation? We got to blow the whole thing up. Who's leaving? Who's staying? Is it Pete or is it Russ? All of this stuff, all of this drama that, I mean, I just read an article from Randy Mueller, the former Saints GM. And, you know, his basic premise, again, another long ass article about what he would do in. He says, at a minimum, this is a massive retooling. A massive retooling. At a minimum. The discussion is out there about this being a full-on rebuild. In fact, most people, there's a Shefty report that just came out that says, oh, well, we think that, you know, the Pete and Russ era is definitely done. That's what the sources around the league say. There's a lot of talk all around the place. Like, there's just a lot of uncertainty going into this offseason. So why make yourself look like a hypocrite by saying something that you may not be able to follow through on?
Okay, so you think he is in the dark then about where the future of the team is going, but it sounds like, it, because you know, Pete was asked about the reports of Russ going somewhere on 710, you referenced him, and his quote was, I don't mess with them, meaning those reports, I don't have to, I know what's going on, I don't need to follow the agenda somebody has out there to try and create and stir stuff up. So if he's talking to Russ and Pete's talking to Jody and they're all knowing what's going on going into next season, why would they not all be more confident about the future of the team together?
Hey, Brandon, I want you to pretend to be John Schneider for a second.
Okay.
I'm calling you. Bring, bring.
Yeah. John Schneider here. How's it going, brother?
Oh, see, there you go. I was going to say you didn't say brother in there. Like, you're screwing it up. Hey, this is Jerry Jones from the Dallas Cowboys. I was wondering what you're thinking about doing with Russ.
Russ is our quarterback next season. He's under contract for 2 years.
Okay, that's cool. I actually have a quarterback that's under contract as well, actually. Coming off a really good season, probably NFL comeback player of the year. How about you trade me Russ for Dak and 3 firsts?
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm 100% serious. You ready to do the deal?
I don't know if I'd do it for Dak.
And three firsts?
I don't know.
I'm just saying there's potential offers to be made out there by other teams that nobody can say with certainty that we're not taking that deal and going a different route. Nobody can say that right now.
You think that they're going to go through this all this offseason and play it out the exact same way that they did last season with all of the questions around Russ? They're going to go, okay, that worked so well last year to get free agents to the team and made everybody confident in what's going to happen for the next season, that we're just going to allow Russell Wilson rumors to fester through the entire offseason and just so we can take a bunch of calls that we're probably ultimately going to say no to.
Okay, number one, we don't know for a fact at all that affected free agency. Maybe. But honestly, doesn't it seem like the John Schneider, Pete Carroll, the rest of the organization could honestly give a catfish what everybody else around the league is saying? They don't care.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, though. In fact, I kind of lean toward it being more of a bad thing than a good thing.
I think it's a great thing. You shouldn't care what everybody else thinks about you and your organization.
You want free agents to care about what they think about your organization.
Sure. Again, we don't know that was a big factor overall. Who is it that we lost because of that? AB? Oh, my stars. I wish we could have brought AB in to have a freaking hissy fit on the sidelines and walk off the field again.
I don't know how you can gauge that because there's so many of the top guys that didn't even make a visit. Gosh, you had offensive linemen that went to school with Russell Wilson at Wisconsin that didn't even make a visit to Seattle.
Sure. I mean,
and who knows what the circumstances was. Maybe he just wanted to be on the East Coast. Who knows? But the fact that he didn't even visit, I mean, and at a position of need on the offensive line, I don't know.
Okay.
It makes me think there's the potential that it impacts free agency.
Not everything is black and white. Like, we both agree on that. So I would imagine there's a percentage of reason pie there, right? Like, let's say that the percentage of the reason pie some of these free agents didn't come here was 15%. Does it matter?
If it's 15%, it probably doesn't matter.
Okay.
But if it's the difference between landing a free agent that has a huge impact on your team versus one that, I mean, look at the guys. One of the things that came out of the Rob Staton article was the debacle of the 2020 offseason, having $60 million to spend, and the list of names of guys that they spent it on. And you look at a list of players that essentially aren't even on this team anymore and really didn't have that much of an impact on the 2020 season overall. So are you confident that things are suddenly going to change after last offseason not really getting a ton of strong free agent talent? That's back-to-back season. You can probably go back the past few years.
If teams like the Arizona Cardinals, the Cleveland Browns, the New York Jets, the New York Giants can sign free agents, you can sign free agents too. You might just pay a little bit more. Like, really, ultimately, at the end of the day, that's the bottom line.
Oh, yeah. J.J. Watt got a boatload of money to go to Arizona. Look at all the money that the Patriots spent to get the top free agents on their team.
Exactly. So, really, this whole, there's too much drama for a player to go there or not, or any of that crap.
It's more that John Schneider and Pete Carroll are too cheap.
I think there has been a large part of that, and they have been cheaper because they have a quarterback on a big contract. There's no doubt about it. And they've made some whiffs in signing on in free agencies as well. But the opportunity is there yet again this year. And then not only that, if you're worried about them attracting free agents, what did all our potential free agents say? You talked about Dwayne Brown and him being unequivocal that he wanted to be back. You talk about Quandre Diggs and how much he wants to be back. Like, if these guys all want to come back, this isn't Jacksonville where everybody leaves and then files a grievance. This isn't Washington where everybody thinks Dan Snyder is a skeezer. People want to be here. And the reputation around the league is that it's a good place to be. And Pete's a guy. Listen to Matt Hasselbeck talk about Pete. You're telling me that's not a great recruiting tool? Like, the idea that this is going to be an issue in free agency is ridiculous. And then secondly, the league new year, what day does that start?
March something.
And what day does free agency start?
Same day.
So one of the things that Mueller brought up in his article was, is if you're going to trade Russell Wilson and get the max benefit from it.
Yeah.
He has a something like an $11 million cap hit this coming year. And if you're going to trade him, if you don't do it by the league new year, then it's something like half of that still counts against your cap. So what, you save a whole $5 million against the cap and then get a few draft picks back for Russ? Is that really worth it? So if you're going to trade him, you got to do it before the league new year. So if you don't trade him by the league new year, then at that point, Russ and Pete and John could all stand on the table and be like, we're doing this for two more years. We got this. Come on in. This is a dead nut certainty. And then you start free agency. So there's no doubt in these players' minds.
If it worked that well, then why was there so much uncertainty around it last year? And even when there was more certainty around the fact that they really shouldn't have been in the market to trade Russell Wilson anyway.
So do you think it was uncertainty within the building or a lot of extra hubbubaloo blown up by a media that is so freaking ridiculous, it's not even funny?
There's a ridiculous amount of that, but it's also the team has the ability to make it less of a distraction. Russell Wilson has the ability to make it less of a distraction. It's for fans. I mean, gosh, yeah. we're riled up all offseason because
exactly.
of it.
And again, if I'm the GM of a football team, you know what I don't give a rip about? What
you don't give a rip about your fans?
I care about the fans, but look, at the end of the day, like that's not on my list of things that I'm concerned about in terms of running the team. How the fans feel is definitely towards the bottom. Okay. Like I got other things. Like if the media wants to run their mouth, run your mouth. I could give two craps about any of that.
The difference is generally you don't in Seattle have to worry about filling the seats. But if you haven't noticed, there's been a lot of empty seats at the games these last few games. And going into next season, if I'm renewing my season tickets mm-hmm. and I feel as though it's uncertain whether or not Russell Wilson's going to be the quarterback next year, do you think I'm making a decision on whether or not if either nothing changes and I'm thinking as a fan, I'm going to be spending money to go watch another 6-win team. I think there's a decision to be made that the general manager has an impact on and the team has an impact on to show at least a positive movement forward.
In the last 20 years, has it been easy or difficult to get Seahawks season tickets?
It's been difficult.
Okay. So if it was really difficult for you to get season tickets and you're that sort of diehard fan where you're willing to spend a couple grand on football season every year, do you just get rid of those because of one or two or three bad seasons? Like, is there going to be a mass exodus of season ticket holders?
The only reason I got my tickets in the first place was because of the Jim Mora Jr. year. I couldn't get on the list. I uh-huh. had to wait. And uh-huh. then Mora came on and they sucked that year. And there yeah. were a lot of people bailing because it looked like, you know, gosh, you just hired this coach. He stinks. And I'm not going to go and watch this team that stinks year after year. So I'm out.
Hey, and to your point, there was nobody there to gobble those up. Not even Brandon Schultz.
Right.
So to come down to selling tickets, though, this is, again, where I get back to it being a business. I mean, look, Pete makes $8 million a year. I think he's under contract for another 4 years.
Yeah, it might be even more than that.
Okay.
I don't think we're sure. Yeah.
There's side hustles and all that stuff, right? But let's take it for face value. This ownership group, who's not so much interested in football and more in money, is not going to eat $24 million in a contract. Secondly, are you going to pay those contracts and to make the most amount of money? Do you trade away your biggest ticket draw?
No.
No.
So make that clear.
That's up to John Schneider.
It is. Period. It's up to John. It's up to Pete. It's up to the way they speak within the media. And I think that they should change that because that's one of the things that they do every offseason. Oh, well, any player can be traded, da 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 da.
Yeah.
And that's what, and so when something like this comes up, they, you know, well, any player can be traded. Does that mean Russ can be traded? Oh, yeah, it means any of the guys on our team can be traded.
Right. You got to say that stuff so that it doesn't feel like there's preferential treatment on your team and all that stupid crap. Because, again, we got to worry about everybody's feelings.
You say Russ is our quarterback moving forward. And that's how it is.
Look, I would love for that. But everybody's putting this on Russ and the way that he's talking about things. He honestly doesn't have that much control in this situation. And if you're frustrated with the ambiguity of the answers and everything from the coaches and the players, which again are still within a season, they haven't even finished a season yet, then there's one person to be mad at, and that, well, two possibly, and that's either Jody Allen in the ownership group or John Schneider. Be mad at them. I just don't know what else more you want out of Russ.
I don't think it's just Russ. I think, you know, Pete is above John. So I think if Pete were to come out and say it, I think that would.
I don't think he will be next year.
You think that's part of the changes?
Yep. I'd say that's the biggest seismic change this offseason.
It's kind of the Mike Holmgren type switch from him being the guy to passing it. But the thing is that it would just be John Schneider being the guy, which is kind of how it is anyway. But in terms of general manager.
According to the media, Brandon, John Schneider is basically neutered in that front office, and it all just comes down to Pete.
And I think that that's really the shift would be better for John in the long term, too, because it elevates him a little bit. But would it be, do you think they would be public with that? Or do you think that would be an under the radar, inside the building type thing that just gets maybe leaked out a little bit or doesn't even leak out? Something like that would have to leak out.
Yeah, it'd have to leak out. Because considering the way this team operates in terms of all these things, they don't feel the need to be public about it, nor should they. And everybody else can go pound sand if they don't like the, quote, secrecy and all that. Like, everybody's fine with it when it's Belichick. But when it's anybody but Belichick, oh, my gosh, I wish they'd just say something. There's a lack of transparency. I can't believe this. Instead of just being like, we're on to 2022.
That could be. Is there any other shift that you would see then, them making in the offseason? Any coaching changes?
If they're smart, they really prioritize building the offensive line.
Yeah.
Because, look, I guess the number one reason I say that is all year, the teams that have a decent offensive line, they've been able to run it down the Rams' throats all year. And then they get beat.
Yeah.
So that was the one team in this stretch of Rashad Penny's greatness in which he totaled something like 39 yards. And it's because the offensive line wasn't able to push around the Rams. You need to build that offensive line to push around the Rams and the Cards in the Niners. Like, that's it. And that's all. Just do that. The rest of it will fall into place. You'll still lose some games because the defense probably gives up too many points here or there, collapses for a half or two, especially if you retain Ken Norton, which they probably will. That's all fine and dandy, but you'll probably score enough points to win 10 and 11 games, be in the playoffs. And if you have a legit offensive line, you probably have a legit chance of winning the chip.
The offensive line should be the focus. Again, the Detroit game was illustrative of that. But just imagine that it's the Rams on the other end, and your offensive line is so superior that even with Aaron Donald on the other side of the football, that is the type of push that you're getting against a really good defensive line and just not a crappy defensive line like the Lions.
And imagine how much that extends Russell Wilson's career.
Did he even get touched?
I don't think so.
They gave up three pressures in this game. Gabe Jackson gave up two pressures, one hit. So he did get one hit. Oh, and there was one sack that was charged to. Oh, because Jake Curran, I think he got beat real bad on one play.
Well, there you go. And our number one complaint about this team isn't that they're a bad team, is that they're an inconsistent team. To be a consistent team, because we have all the perimeter players. We really do. I mean, Metcalf and Lockett are great. Everett's been good. Parkinson had a great game this last game. And I don't care if it's Swain or Eskridge or whoever it is plays the third receiver. They'll get theirs as long as you build consistency. And the way you do that is to consistently win in the trenches. And if they can do that, this team is a totally different team.
I hope they can do it. Because I said it last week with the blocking scheme that I think Waldron is implementing, it looks better than it ever did under Cable. So I feel like Waldron knows what he's doing. And I have a feeling that can improve then in his second year.
Oh, 100%. Look, we were going to go through some growing pains for Shane Waldron this season, being it was his first year ever being an OC. Like, that's just going to happen, and that's okay. And you can tell he's learned as he's gone. There's no doubt about it. But Pete seems happy with him. Russ seems happy with him. The players seem happy with him. I'm sure he learned a lot of lessons. And give him the personnel up front, this will be a different looking team. And if you're sitting there on the other end of the speaker here, wringing your hands about the number three wide receiver, you need to readjust your priorities. I don't want to hear another media outlet talk about how we need to address the number three receiver. Who gives a catfish when the offensive line can't protect your quarterback? It doesn't matter who your third receiver is because you can't get past two.
I hope that that's a lesson for John Schneider and Pete Carroll from the draft last year. I wish they could have taken that to heart in the draft last season.
I know. But they felt apparently that they needed to bring in another weapon to keep Russ happy instead of offensive linemen to keep Russ upright and then therefore happy.
So you're confident that they learned their lesson from last season and every Absolutely. Season that they haven't brought in better offensive linemen for him.
I hope so. That, and I mean, literally what they ought to be doing. I've heard this a lot over Seahawks, whether it's Twitter or comments or whatever. I mean, let's just trade DK Metcalf because he's got a terrible attitude anyways and bring in some offensive linemen. That'd be a great idea.
I am almost 90% sure that the fan sentiment about DK Metcalf is driven from the way broadcasters call the games with regard to the ball not going to DK. Because you hear Talib, oh, DK's body language out there. Oh, and then he catches a touchdown. Oh, look at that. He's happy. Okay. And look at look at the difference in his body language. No, the difference is that he hadn't scored and then he did score. And so that makes a player happy. It's the same thing that the announcers go, ooh, the touchdown from the opposition quieted the crowd at Lumen Field. Well, yeah, we don't cheer when the other team scores. That's kind of how it works. Just like DK Metcalf doesn't look like he scored a touchdown when he's not scoring touchdowns.
It's so funny, that whole body language thing, because you're 100% on point. It's a lot like you're living at home with your wife and you just head jerk for like a week, right? Like, you leave your clothes everywhere. You don't help with no dishes. She's got to plan every meal. And on top of that, take care of the kids and then go to work. And you come home and are just, you know, basically a bachelor and aren't engaged at all. I wonder what her body language is going to look like. I wonder how her attitude's going to be. But then if the next week you turn around and you're a model freaking husband and you go out of your way to do all the little things to make her life better so that she's not taking all of the household duties, which she should never have to do in the first freaking place, and go to work and do all that stuff too. If you pick up your half of the burden and treat her nicely and make her feel good and then take her out to dinner maybe twice, I wonder what her body language looks like then. Like, when catfish, it's going good, your body language is good. When catfish, it's going bad, your body language is bad.
Yeah, why does the and not one comment on Tyler and his body language? Or it's all because they're trying to build the diva angle with Metcalf. And it's fascinating to me to watch and listen to.
If Tyler was truly a team player, he would dye his hair some ridiculous color as well. That way, then he would also be the diva and kind of split the diva coverage between the wide receivers. That's quite literally the only reason this is happening to DK Metcalf. I'm convinced.
The hair color, the bink mouthpiece.
I guess.
Because they both seem like equally really, really nice guys to me.
Yeah. Genuinely good dudes. Want to win. Big time competitors.
Although I will say in press conferences, DK seems to, like, he wears it on his sleeve how much he hates to lose, especially in the press conferences. Yeah, he has a bad attitude after losing. Okay.
So does every receiver that has as many abs as Terrell Owens, exactly the same player as Terrell Owens, is that our measure?
I think that's the measure. I do believe that that's the measure.
I mean, golly. Yeah. Again, another crazy media-driven. This last like couple weeks, whether it's been national news or sports news, I literally can't handle it anymore. Like, the amount of ridiculousness.
It's probably a good time to check out for a little bit.
Yeah, I've been trying really hard to do that.
Well, we do have a game coming up, a final game of the season coming up against the Arizona Cardinals. And man, oh man, thankfully we're going up against Kyler Murray, because as long as Colt McCoy doesn't make it on the field, I think we're winning this game.
I bet you they bring in McCoy at half just to screw with everybody's head.
I do actually have some concerns, though, because with the number of guys who are going to be out with COVID, sounds like Al Woods is out. You got the other young dude that had a nice game in the middle.
I can picture his picture in my head, but I can't think of his name. Does the last name start with an A?
Oh, yeah, you're right. With an A. Miles Adams. Yeah, he's out with COVID. And did I mention our safety, Ryan Neal?
Oh, I didn't realize Ryan Neal was out. Again, doesn't much matter. If they lose, a little bit higher draft pick. If they win, we get to stick it to the Cardinals. It's all a win. Just as long as nobody gets hurt, we're in good shape.
I do want to stick it to the Cardinals, though.
Yeah, I kind of do, too. I mean, I would relish in it.
I like the idea of finishing out the season with a win. We haven't done that in a while, like since 2013.
True fact. All right. I don't know if you've heard this, but better to win than it is to lose.
It is better to win than lose. And I want to beat the freaking Cardinals before and send them into the playoffs with a loss.
Yeah, man. Let's choke the chickens.
They're not chickens.
Well, they're a bird. Close enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not a kitty like the Lions.
You can't spank the kitties in this game. So you got to choke the chickens.
Let's get to the second half of the show. Getting into the second half of the show and looking at the NFC West, and really through the NFC, because I think Clinton is right on when he posted in the Ring of Honor this week, said it might feel dirty, but go Rams, go Saints,
catfish,
the Niners. And what Clinton is saying here is if the Rams win playing the 49ers, and the Saints win, San Francisco's out of the playoffs.
I think I'm rooting for that. I am, because I mean, I got to deal with the Rams winning the Super Bowl this year, one way or the other, because it's been decided. And then, the one less team that I have to see in the playoffs that I despise, all the better.
Although if the Niners, if they beat the Rams, and having beaten them twice already, do you think the NFL would be able to fix it? Or would the Niners just have their number? And would you rather have the Niners beat the Rams to avoid a Rams Super Bowl, knowing that the Niners would just be an automatic loss in the next round anyway?
You know, it's super cute that you think that there's a way that there's not a Rams Super Bowl this year. It's adorable.
Am I that naive?
Apparently.
I may as well live with it, because when I look at the other NFC teams, I guess maybe I would root for the Saints to be in there, just because that would be one team that I might be able to stand cheering for 1 week.
There you go. Hey, there is good news, though. There's only one man, well, I guess two men in the playoffs coming up here that can potentially foil an NFL plot to make sure that LA wins a Super Bowl. One is named Tom Brady and the other is Bill Belichick. So there is a chance that there isn't a Rams Super Bowl, but it's going to take one of those two men.
Ooh, I think Aaron Rodgers would be upset to be left off that list.
Well, then win a Super Bowl again sometime in the last two decades, and we'll call it good.
Well, yeah, because he can't even seem to win an NFC championship, can he?
Yeah, he's got to prove it first. He's amazing in the regular season.
Do you think that he makes it to the NFC championship and he finds the way to ultimately get screwed, and that's what allows the Rams to move on?
They got to get past Tom.
That's true, too.
I mean, I'm not ready to write in the Rams or the Packers over the Bucks. Like, I will say that the Rams have the best odds of all of them because of, you know, Roger. But yeah.
When your finger is on the scale of one particular team, you do have the best odds.
Yes. But I ain't counting out Tom either, man. Like, you know.
Yeah. Did you see that drive, that final drive against the Jets?
No.
He came in with 50 some seconds on the clock against the Jets, no timeouts. And I think they scored with 20 seconds still on the clock.
Just gave him a Brady masterclass.
Like three deep passes, like one toward the middle, one down the sideline deep, and then in the end zone. And yeah, it may have been more plays than that, but that's what it felt like in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah. He's the best for a reason, man.
And Clinton was at that game too, but he was in the bathroom when Antonio Brown had his big hissy fit and celebration as he ran off the field. So he missed out on it.
Do we have any sense of what is actually going on with that?
No, because everybody's lying, I think. Because BA is lying about whatever he said, and AB's probably not giving the best account either. I don't know if I can trust him, but you know what? It's funny because I side with Brown because it is Bruce Arians. I side with Brown more than I do the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, that's what my gut says, of course. But then I see headlines like it was something along the lines of AB cried out for help in the Bucks turned their back on him or something, trying to, you know, paint the Bucks bad for being like anti-mental health, because they're like, if you're going to have a hissy fit, throw your jersey and your shirt into the crowd and then storm off the field, then you can't come back to the team. Like, they don't like mental health. That was a little victimhood mentality there.
And I don't even know why everybody has to go the mental health angle with AB on the way he left the field, because that was kind of awesome.
I guess.
I mean, if you're going to go out, wouldn't that kind of be fun?
I guess it depended. Well, yeah. Okay, I will.
Like, okay, on if this your boss is as huge of a catfish as Bruce Arians.
Exactly.
Like, don't you start thinking up ways of sticking it to your boss, like, yes, if he were to fire you? And that is the best thing that you could come up with to, rather, other than going full double birds right in his face. Like, that's kind of essentially what you're doing anyway.
Yeah, you won me over on this. You're 100% right. I'm totally pro AB in this situation, because he did kind of stick it to BA.
See, I've been thinking about this a lot. And
yeah. And then not only that, but apparently in the text that Antonio released, BA even refers to himself as BA in his own text.
Yeah.
Hey, this is BA. Get back to me. I mean, he's basically Raymond Holt from the Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Writes this whole message out and is like, sincerely, Raymond Holt.
Yeah, sincerely, BA. Although I don't think he says sincerely.
No, he just refers to himself as BA. Hey, this is Coach. Hey, this is Bruce. Hey, this is Stupid Hat Man. Hey, it's BA.
I have some sympathy for Brown. What can I say?
Okay. You won me over. You won me over.
Now, I still don't think that everything that happened, it hurts the Bucks' chances at all. Maybe it even helps, but I think they do have a chance to take down the Rams in the playoffs.
Oh, God. You bet against Tom Brady anytime you'd like.
No,
I dare you.
I'm not doing it.
Okay.
It just kind of feels gross rooting for Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers to take down the Rams, which I feel like I hate more.
Okay. So here's the deal. Those two players, Rodgers and Brady, are not comparable as human beings. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Rodgers is very much a sanctimonious, self-centered human that is difficult to listen to. Tom Brady's a fairly decent dude.
I can buy that.
Like, it's pretty easy to root for Tom for me. I don't have the Tom Brady hatred that a lot of people do, just because, I don't know, they're tired of watching somebody be great. But Rodgers,
that's part of it. I think that's a big part. Well, I think Michael Jordan had his people that hated Jordan just because he was so great. Tired of seeing him win all the time.
Well, then beat him. Like, and in the meantime, be like, you know, celebrate the dude's greatness. Yeah.
Because I'm sure you just love LeBron James and his greatness over on the Lakers.
Here's the thing. I don't hate LeBron James. I mean, especially he beat my Celtics a bunch as a member of the Heat. Right. He basically disassembled that team.
I feel like that's a guy that you should sports hate.
I don't. How can I? Like, now what I do hate is that anybody tries to compare him to Jordan in terms of greatness. There's a couple great videos that just pick that apart, and it's not even close. However, he seems to be a pretty self-aware, decent guy, and he's great. He's won a lot of championships and been to the finals a bunch. I don't hate him.
It doesn't bother me that people make the greatness commentary, just because it's the guy from your generation who is the greatest of your generation.
Yeah, well, Jordan's the greatest of all time, and there's really not a big argument.
But you live through that generation. There's people who are watching basketball now that didn't live through that generation, so they can only go off of watching some of the history.
Right, which, I mean, that should be enough. But
you don't live through it the same. It's not the same as living through it.
No, that's a fair statement. That's a fair statement.
It's like Jim Brown. I hear everybody say, oh, well, Jim Brown's the greatest running back. It's like, well, Barry was really, really good. But I don't have the life experience of watching Jim Brown.
True. True. But I am a smart enough football fan to have watched a little bit of Jim Brown. And if you want to make the argument that Jim Brown was the greatest running back of all time, I say, okay. Now, when you try to make that argument about Emmett Smith, then we're going to have an argument. But like, that's a whole nother ballgame.
Always got to bring up Emmett. We're moving on from this. Time to welcome some new members of the flock.
Hey, all right.
Oh, well, not new members. We have some people to thank for pledge. We don't have any new members this week. Although, okay. Well, maybe do we? I don't. Oh, we'll get into it.
All right.
Thanks to our executive producers, DCH, Dustin Mock, Brian Shaw, Kevin Watterson, Jason Kyler Yano for his 145-44 contribution last week. And then Flocktimus Prime comes in with the annual contribution, going with the full 145-44 for the full year, coming in January, helping us out.
That's awesome. I mean, with the support of Flocktimus and all of our other executive producers, this idea of retiring from wheel grinding and doing more shows seems more and more likely. But again, we're going to need more support than just them. I mean, all you other awesome little flockers are going to have to, you know, either step up your game or your less than awesome freeloaders, you know, maybe pitch in a little bit, do your part, quit being a freeloader.
Maybe it's time. The off season is an outstanding time to make that turn because, hey, we're going into the off season. This is where it tends to be a little bit more of a drought and
won't be this year.
You would a drought in terms of content, you mean? Or,
oh, yeah, content. I thought that's what you were talking about.
Yeah, there's going to be plenty of stuff to talk about this offseason.
Yeah.
But yes, and we also got a contribution via Dave Bloomquist, Hong Kong Hawk, sent on behalf of the Ring of Honor League 2 winner Jeffrey and third place finisher Jamie. So instead of taking their cash prize, Jeffrey and Jamie said, no, send it in as a donation. And so,
Holy smokes, really?
Yeah. How about that?
That's amazing.
Isn't that
cool? It's like the opposite of what Aaron Rodgers would do.
Yes. You know, I was going to mention, though, Aaron has been getting a little bit of sympathy this last week after the MVP voting guy came out and said, oh, well, I'm not voting for Aaron Rodgers because of his hissy fits that he had in the offseason before this year. Mm-hmm. And everybody, there's a significant number of people coming to Aaron Rodgers' defense in this about his MVP candidacy this year.
Oh, well, that writer is a jackass and like should have his MVP vote taken away from him because honestly, yeah, Rodgers is a very worthy candidate of an MVP vote. I don't have to like the guy like that. That's not what part of the MVP race is likability. It's most valuable player. And he's clearly one of the most valuable players in the league. So like,
It was funny listening to that interview with the voter. And I think he's a writer out of Chicago and he qualified his statement with, I should probably not be saying this, but I'm not voting for Aaron Rodgers. And it's like, well, you even know that it's the wrong thing to do. You just keep it to yourself. Don't vote for him. And, you know, crisis averted.
Yeah.
He might have his vote taken away from him.
Yeah. Usually if in your head before you say something, and I'm probably the worst person to give this advice, but in your head before you say something, if it's, I probably shouldn't be saying this, then don't.
That's right. If you have to vocalize it and not just say again, because the best thing to do is just have that little voice in your head that says, I probably shouldn't be saying this. And then you don't even say the words, I probably shouldn't be saying this. You just, you stop it. You cut it off right there.
Yep.
That's the best place for it to stop.
That, each but
the
and every
second,
time
the second best place for it to stop is after the words come out of your mouth saying that I shouldn't be saying this.
I probably shouldn't say this, but yeah, no.
There you go.
And then you just end it right there.
Go right there.
You're going to get badgered, but just stop. Don't let anybody badger you into saying it.
It's the second best time to stop.
Yeah. You might say something's really, really catfishing stupid, like pancakes are better than waffles. That might come out of your mouth accidentally. So just stop yourself before you do that.
Also wanted to call out Chris, who donated 4 tickets to the Bears game a couple weeks ago. And I That's hooked awesome. Him up with Larry, who took his brother and nephew to their first game. And so, yeah, I wanted to call out Chris and thank him for just that really nice gesture.
That is amazing. And I'm sure they were very much enjoyed, except for the fact that it ended up being a loss. a very stupid loss.
That it was. It was a dumb, stupid loss. Hopefully we don't have any more of those this season.
Well, that would be great. I mean, the last game was the antithesis of that. So, I mean, if they could continue that, dude, it would feel good to beat the stupid Cards, right? Finish 7-10. Or what is that what
would
be?
It would be, yeah, it would be 7-10 would be the finishing. But then, I mean, okay. So, if the Seahawks don't make many changes in the offseason, do you think then that fans are going to attribute the fact that the Seahawks finished with the last two games as a win to where the organization, they thought that they just couldn't get rid of them because they won these last two games?
Probably not. I mean, I think this decision has more or less been made, you know, short of Godfather offers being made and things of that nature. But, you know, the other thing, actually, this is something I didn't talk about during the, you know, guts of the show, but people, I see the narrative out there a lot by the media that, well, they got to get rid of Russ because, I mean, the cupboard is bare draft picks wise. And like, what are they going to do? What are you talking about? They have a crap ton of cap space. They have six draft picks going into this next draft, including draft picks that will be fairly high up, a top 10 draft pick in the second round, the third round, one in the fourth, a second one in the fourth, a fifth, and a seventh. It's bare. It's bare. There's nothing there. Like, yeah, we're not the catfishing Rams. We haven't traded away our last five drafts for Matt Stafford and Von Miller. Like, that is so absurd, like, that argument that's being made.
Well, shoot. The only team in the division that even has a first-round pick next year is the Cardinals, right? Do they have a first-round pick?
No idea.
They would be the only ones, because I know that the Rams don't have one. I know that the Niners don't have one.
Yep. Yeah. So, yep, got to trade Russ. Cupboard's bare. What are they going to do? They're in jail. They can't make any changes on their roster to just retool. They don't have loads of cap space and six draft picks, plus all their draft picks the following year. Like, they're done. They're done. There's nothing that can be done.
So they have two in the top 10 of the fourth round because they have the Jets fourth rounder, right? Is that the what they got back in the Jamal Adams trade?
So there you go. Yeah. Nope. Cupboard's bare. Cupboard's bare.
Looking at the Pick'em League, I need Flowers to Wags, my Dixon, still 169 points, leading the league. Israeli Hawks, number two in the sole second place, 167. What a Hasselbeck at 166, and Chelsea Hawks, peaceful, easily feeling unlimited Hawker right there, 165. Make sure you continue to pick as we go through the playoffs because our Pick'em League continues through the playoffs.
Yeah.
Rashad Penny's right leg, the winner this week with 15 picks correct.
Wow. That seems apropos right there. Did you fix this? Are you Roger Goodell-ing this?
I put my finger on the scale of an awesome team name and it's such a good week that Rashad Penny had.
A fitting team name for this last week.
FedEx Ground Player of the Week.
NFC Player of the Month, correct?
Was it Player of the Month?
Well, no, he also did the FedEx thing too.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if the NFC thing was a weekly thing or a monthly thing.
Oh, I think they do both. Maybe it was just the week. I don't know.
He's had a heck of a month, so it wouldn't surprise me if it was a monthly thing, too.
Yeah.
Way to wait till the end, Rashad. Make this hard on us.
It's not hard. The decision's only just a slightly bit harder. Like, would you take a mid-tier or a bargain basement contract for 1 year, Penny? If the answer is yes, great. If the answer is no, enjoy your time in Dallas.
I don't think that the Seahawks actually have to worry about him getting some big kind of deal, because I feel like every other NFL team out there would be kind of the same mind. They would look at it and say, well, who has he done it against and when did he do it? Is it worth taking that big of a risk on a running back? Now, I could see other teams taking a risk on other types of players the way that the Jets took a risk on George Fant, because tackles are a lot harder to find than running backs. And so, I don't know. I could see Rashad coming back for a reasonable contract.
You don't think that the Atlanta Falcons are dumb enough to want to try and like hit a home run by bringing in Petty to help out Matty Mediocre as he, you know, plays out the string there in Atlanta?
It'd be one of the worst things to happen to him because that Falcons line isn't very good.
Oh, well, it didn't matter to him when they signed Todd Gurley.
you know what? We could sign Todd Gurley next year, and he could probably put up similar production if that's the kind of blocking that he gets.
He could probably, him and AP could be a really great coach tandem.
Just bring him in as player coaches.
Neither one of those guys are playing anymore.
Yeah, when Peterson comes in for 1 week and essentially does the, what, Matt Hasselbeck run into the end zone and hurts his back.
It's a fragile back run.
His final touchdown.
Yeah.
That's probably all we're getting of AD.
I guess I'm just really stunned at all of the talk about what a difference he made in terms of his influence. Like, you hear a lot of guys talking about it this year.
Well, a lot of guys being peaked every single week, and then also Rashad every time he's asked about it. Yeah.
True. Okay. I don't know. I mean, other guys have talked about it, but maybe not as glowingly.
No.
I just didn't know he was that guy.
I don't think there's any denying it, though. It's obviously there's a cause and effect relationship there.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. On to do better and better at life.
All right, man. My do better this week is for the state of New York. I saw an article the other day written talking about the idea that the legislature is literally considering banning the use of wood to heat your home in a state where it gets cold and snowy on the freaking regular. You are encouraging people to trust the grid to keep them warm throughout the entire winter, every winter, and not at the very least have a wood fired backup. That is one of the dumbest freaking ideas I've ever heard in my life. Talk about anti-preparedness. Talk about literally trying to kill people, all in the name to keep the electric company rolling in the money and the gas companies rolling in the money. Heaven forbid you have people self-sustaining on their wood-fired stove, staying nice and toasty and catfishing alive during your big-time winters. State of New York legislature, if you pass this crap, you are the worst. Do better.
That would be mainly for the city folks, I feel like, right?
Like, no, this is a statewide initiative that's being discussed.
Huh. They know that people live upstate in the cold, right? Like in Buffalo?
Well, yeah. They also know that they have to pay a lot of money to get that propane truck to get up there and fill up their tanks, too.
That seems...
Oh, but it's all in the name of the environment, because a carbon neutral situation like wood... It's definitely something you should be targeting. Let's make sure to push everybody more towards gas, like, you know, because it's better for the environment. Okay.
Yeah, that does seem counterintuitive that burning fossil fuels would be better than burning something that is regenerative.
Yeah. Huh. It's about the money, Lebowski.
Interesting.
Yeah. One of the many articles this week that lit my hair literally on fire.
Yeah, see, this is something that would make some sort of sense, I don't know, like in the South, like where it doesn't really even get cold.
Yeah, well, I mean, you could, I guess it makes sense in the sense that there are certain governments that like to do that sort of thing. Like Missoula County, nope, you cannot have a wood burner within the majority of Missoula County. There's a few little exempt zones, but you cannot have one unless it was grandfathered in.
Right.
Like from way long ago. So if you have a massive snowstorm like today, where we're buried under a couple feet of snow right now, literally, and the power goes out, you just get to turn into a human popsicle because heaven forbid you have a wood stove.
It does seem better to have that as a backup option.
Hey, I'll tell you what, I've got it as a primary option. We are nice and toasty.
Well, if you want a backup option in terms of your career, there's a new opening up because, you know what the difference between a good clickbait headline is and just a good headline? Mm. Let me know if you can tell which one this is. Headline: U.S. reality star who made $200,000 selling farts in a jar, hospitalized.
All right. I'm wondering if this is clickbait or a good one. I'm going to say this is actually a legit good one.
This is a legit good one that you do have to click on. And you find out that Steph Motto, 31, she thought she was having a stroke, but eventually learned that excessively farting in jars and the diet that comes along with this demanding gig was too much for her body to handle. The article says, this is literally a quote from the story. Motto was popping out up to 50 jars of farts a week, which required her to increase her fiber intake. 50 jars a week.
50 jars of farts. Why is there that much demand for Steph's farts in a jar?
When you find out how much it is per jar, you're really going to have that question, because she reportedly made $1,270 a jar. Although she did offer a 50% discount during the holidays, it says.
All right. Look, this is easy. So I'm done with podcasting now. Wheel grinds, all that. I will sell you a fart in a jar for $50.
Well, the good thing is there, because it sounds like she's retiring because of the medical issues that she has. Well, so it did say in the headline that she was hospitalized. She thought she was having a stroke, and it turned out that she just had really, really bad gas pains because now she didn't tell the doctor exactly what her profession was, but she did explain her diet, and the doctor advised her to change her diet and actually put her on gas suppressant medication, which she says effectively ended her business.
So there's a, you're saying that there's a void in the,
there's now a void in the market.
In the, the gas discharge jar market.
But here's the thing, Steph, you're giving up way too early on this, way too easily. You're telling me that even with gas suppressant medication, that you can't squeak out, I don't know, five a week? Can't be that hard. Five a week?
What human being doesn't have at least five farts a week?
At least five a week. Just have a jar on hand when you feel one coming on. And yeah, you don't have to continue to do the thing where you mix eggs and beans and bananas into your protein shake to enhance the smell like she reportedly did. And maybe you have to sell them for a little bit of a discount, but $1,000 a jar five times a week? You can't live off of $5,000 a week? Come on, Steph. This is not the time to quit. Do better.
Where do we sell fart jars? Like, where is this? Like, how does this begin? How do I get in the jar farting game?
If I knew, I would have already moved to this profession by now.
Although I do have some sympathy for her. I do understand the idea of like having to write down your profession on a, you know, piece of paper, right?
Right.
Like, what do you do? Well, I'm a jar farter. You know, like my daughter, when she's filling out her college applications and stuff, she's like, what do I put down for your profession? And I'm like, dirty grinder?
Dirty grinder. Dad's a dirty grinder.
Yeah. Like, I don't know what else you put. It's an odd job, you know?
It is. Well, your job is significantly less odd, but also significantly less profitable.
Decided that her farts were the farts that you want to smell.
I don't know.
I need to know more about this. Where do I find more information about these fart smellers?
Look up Steph Motto, and you probably just Google farts in a jar and her name comes up.
You know what? I have a new goal in life, and that is for when somebody Googles my name, the autofills behind it farts in a jar.
That's when you know you have it made.
Freaking made it. Yeah.
On to Better at Life.
All right, man. I figured you tried to force me into a co-Better at Life the other week, and I'm going to try to force you into one now. Our Better at Life than Skip Bayless has to be for the late, great Betty White.
It does. Yes, we lost a legend, Adam. A legend this last week.
Absolutely, man. I was honestly teeing that up so you talk about her more, because I know how much the Golden Girls and Betty White means to you, and it's just a big deal.
Well, it sadly, she did pass just a couple weeks short of her 100th birthday. But I also like to think that it's kind of like the best type of prank that you could pull off when it's your time to go. Because if you're Betty White, you know that they've been teeing up all of this 100 birthday stuff, you know, because it's coming up close. People magazine even did their feature on her that went out to mailboxes already celebrating her 100th birthday. A little bit early, which I know a lot of people felt like it was a jinx. But I want to think that it was just a little bit of a prank, because it gives everybody else who have produced these television productions like just enough time to tweak it ahead of the celebration. And you know that all the celebrations are still going to happen. So I do think that was, if it was intended that way, kind of a fun way to go out. She was an awesome person. She was an honorary forest ranger. So, you know, that's near and dear to my heart.
I didn't know.
Yes, she was.
Okay.
And lover of animals. Also hilarious. And as you mentioned, one of my favorite, well, my favorite all-time Golden Girl.
No, hilarious lady, amazing career. And honestly, too, like if I'm 99 about to turn 100 and everybody wants to make this big deal out of my 100th birthday, right? And there's all these shows and articles and interviews, and I'm already tired thinking about it. Like, I can't imagine being 99 and knowing that's coming up. Why wouldn't you check out just right about then, knowing all that's on cue? Now you don't have to put in any of the effort to go and do all those things. And all these celebrations are already lined up, and they're going to celebrate the catfish shit out of your life. Like, it's the best way ever to go out. Betty White going out on top once again.
That's what I mean. And she was a little bit of a prankster. So I'm not putting it past her.
Exactly.
Betty White, better at life than Skip Bayless.
100% agree. A genius of the, you know, the woman, the myth, the legend, deeply missed in a national treasure.
And on a touching note, Alan Ludden was her husband of 18 years who passed almost 40 years ago.
Yeah.
His name was the last thing that she said before she passed.
Yeah.
Isn't that cute?
It is. I think it is very touching. It is touching. Just an amazing woman. Hey, let us all make it to 99 in, you know, 11 twelfths.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.